You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We're fired up today, man. We've got a lot of stuff to get to and a lot of heat to bring. We're going to send it to Las Vegas. Dave Malinsky is going to join us straight from the Strip in Las Vegas at Nevada. We'll focus in on some NBA playoff talk with Dave. We've got Game 2, Boston and Washington on the board this evening. Of course, the Wizards started out blistering start in Game 1. They were up 16 freaking nothing. Not only did they blow that lead, they didn't even end up covering the point spread. Will they cover tonight? We'll break it down. Utah Jazz are getting 13 points. And how good is it to be a Golden State Warrior? To have the confidence that they openly admitted that they were hoping that the Los Angeles Clippers were going to beat the Utah Jazz, not because of the basketball matchup, because they didn't want to go to Utah. Like, they openly admit this. And then at first I'm thinking, oh, Matt Barnes, you're an idiot, dude. Like, seriously, Barnes, just shut up. And then, you know, the rest of the team starts to back it up. Oh, yeah, yeah, we don't want to go to Utah. It's terrible. There's nothing to do there. There's no nightlife. Matt Barnes says all there is in Salt Lake City is an Outback Steakhouse and a Benihana. Says, I'll be at the Benihana every night if you want to see me. I like Joe Ingles of the Utah Jazz says, hey, I'll pay for you guys if you want to go to Vegas for a couple of days, you know, because Salt Lake City and Vegas are really close to each other. So actually, you know what's crazy? Don't be surprised if a couple of Golden State Warriors do end up at the Bellagio on an off night. But all kidding aside, you know, it's pretty damn disrespectful to the city of Salt Lake. Actually, not really. Who wants to go to Salt Lake? They don't even have booze in Salt Lake. Like, they got a lot of pills. It's kind of ironic, isn't it? Salt Lake City, they're full of Mormons. You know, they're not down with the sex thing. They're not down with the booze thing. There is booze, but it's limited. It's not like there's bars everywhere. You got to be a member and stuff like that. But there actually is alcohol in the city, you know, not prevalent. But you know what else is interesting, actually? Salt Lake City has the highest pill addiction in America. Like, they pop pills like they're going out of style in Salt Lake City because they can't find anything to drink. All right, so the Golden State Warriors and the Utah Jazz on the board. New York Rangers are a desperate hockey team. The Washington Capitals were a desperate hockey team last night, and they found a way to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know what that way is? To cheap shot Sidney Crosby. Hey, you know what? Like, you know the saying is, if you can't beat them, join them? Well, they can't join them, so if you can't beat them, beat them. That's like the Washington Capitals motto. Yet, I'm kind of all over the place on this thing, because as much as I cry and complain that today's NHL, you know, players are a bunch of wusses, and they're tough dudes, they're great athletes, and they're better than the players of yesteryear. They are better than the players of yesteryear, but there's no fight in these guys, man. You know, there's no fight. There'd be hell to freaking pay in the old days, man. Imagine Wayne Gretzky. Oh, it was an accident. He was falling. I didn't mean it. Well, whatever. When Dave Semenko put a hockey stick through your skull, he didn't mean that either. Imagine Scott Stevens, Chris Chelios, Larry Robinson. Come on, man. What is this? I swear to God, I played in tougher games of shinny in the park in NDG in Montreal than some of this crap. You know, I had a kid once. I was playing in a charity event, all right? It was for charity. I was a radio host. It was for charity. Playing against a bunch of like 15-year-old kids and stuff like that. Playing roller hockey. I don't rollerblade. Rollerblading's lame, all right? You know, rollerblade. Yeah, la-di-da, yeah. I wore a pink tutu and rollerblading. Yeah, I skate. So anyways, you know, he would play rollerblade. So this kid, a couple of times, man, he took the ball from me and stuff because he was slicking around on his rollerblades and stuff. So one time too many, kid kind of, you know, came in, you know, a little too rough in the corner. And I was thinking to myself, you know, Morenci, you are one of the so-called celebrities in this game. And he is a teenager. But you know what I did? I freaking hacked him. Bang! Bang! Kid went down. You know, I was going to hit him again, actually. And I just sort of chuckled and rolled away. Hey, people pull him aside. It's for charity. Don't show me up, you little son of a bitch. And I'll tell you what, if I'm beating up kids in a charity game, what the hell do you think I'd do in an NHL game? There'd be blood all over the place. I was playing in the NBA, hooping up. I had a dude break my nose because I cheap shot it and I tripped him. So the dude, he goes, I'm going to get you. Next play, the guy literally punched me in the face, broke my nose. You know what I did? I leaned down. True story. I leaned down. The blood was coming out. I spit the blood at his feet, and I said, let's ball. And I just had blood gushing everywhere. He was scared to get the blood on him. I was going in. I was laying it up. We lost the game, though. We ended up losing. But anyways, we got a lot of stuff to get to on the program today. So it's a very busy Monday night last night. We had the chaos in the National Hockey League as the Washington Capitals cheap-shotting Sidney Crosby, but nobody sympathizes with Sid the Kid because Sid the Kid's a hacker himself. What goes around comes around, as they say in the National Hockey League. The Houston Rockets obliterate the San Antonio Spurs. I didn't see that coming. I did see the Toronto Raptors losing. They're now 1-12 in game one of the series. And even though they hung around, you sort of got the feeling that LeBron James is sort of like Curly Neal on the Harlem Globetrotters. Come on, he's using a freaking ladder, ref. There's nothing the Raptors can do. Like, the Raptors are good. They just don't have that level that the Cleveland Cavaliers have. So with everything going on last night, you might have missed what happened at Fenway Park last night in Boston as Baltimore Orioles center fielder Adam Jones was just doing his job in the outfield. Numerous fans yelling racial epithets last night. It was KKK night last night at Fenway Park, evidently. Somebody threw a bag of peanuts at him. Well, you guys didn't have banana on store? What, drunken asshole fans in Boston? You guys don't eat fruit, I guess, right? That's too, that's a little fruity for us. So, yeah, Adam Jones gets called out, racist stuff. And, of course, the city of Boston and the mayor, we're not racist. And, you know, how dare people call us? It's like the Patriots. We're not cheaters. We're not this. Well, hey, jackasses, you don't want America to think you're a bunch of racists. Stop acting like a bunch of racists. All right? Now, let's just be real. Isolated incident, of course. It's not an isolated incident. This crowd's been going on for Fenway for far too long, and they've been getting away with it for far too long. The Boston Red Sox can talk all they want about how they're sickened by this. You want to be sickened by it? Take some of those security cameras that you have, find out what fans are doing this, and freaking ban them for life. You can't arrest them. I believe in the First Amendment. You can't arrest these clowns. You can't arrest these jackasses, but you can certainly ban them. They're free to be racist. You're free not to let them into your stadium anymore. How the hell do you jackasses think the other black players on the Boston Red Sox feel knowing that you're a bunch of racist son of a bitches out there in the outfield? And listen, Boston is a great city, beautiful city, all right? They've got 5 million people there. Not everybody's a racist a-hole in the city of Boston. But this isn't an isolated incident. Ask P.K. Subban, all right? Listen, I'm from Montreal. I know all about this. I've seen people from Boston come up since I was a kid, get all wasted, start fights, start puking on St. Catherine Street, and act like a bunch of racist punks towards French people. It's a common pattern. It's not an isolated incident. Come on, man. Did you know that the Boston Red Sox were the last team to integrate? You know, Jackie Robinson was retired for 3 years before the Red Sox had a black dude in her uniform. Isolated incident. It took them 12 years. 12 years after baseball broke the color barrier for the Red Sox to get on board. Isolated incident, my ass. And as I stated, it pains me to say this because I know a lot of good people from Boston. It should be noted the Bruins did have the first African hockey player in Willie O'Ree. So they deserve credit for that. But let's call it out for what it is. Boston sports fans, for the most part, are just those sort of, you know, that frat boy douchebag fraternity prep-ass, jackass, jerk-off that nobody likes. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. We got a little emotional off the top of the program, a little fired up. Got fired up about the Crosby hit. No suspension, actually, is imminent. NHL not doling out any suspensions for that. You know what? I think it was a cheap shot. I think it was a dirty shot. I think the Penguins are a bunch of wusses for not responding. But he got booed. Niskanen got kicked out of the game. That's good enough right there. So we got a great show for you. Warren Sharp, man. Warren's great, man. Warren only focuses on football. So Sharp Football Analysis will join us a little bit later on in the show. We'll take a look at some of these opening numbers as far as NFL regular season win totals are concerned. Mike Cardano's going to join us. We're going to talk about how the Mets are turning into a freaking circus, and how Noah Syndergaard, the whole MRI thing is imploded on them. And we're going to run the gauntlet with the professor from Las Vegas. You can read his daily column on the front page of pregame.com. Dave Malinsky joins us. Dave, always a pleasure. How you doing?
What was up with your Raptors last night, Gabe? Where was the fight?
Well, I tell you what, Dave, now 1-12 in game ones of playoff series. And listen, man, I'm Captain Homer, Dave. If I could find a way to bet on the Raptors, I will. I didn't bite last night. I knew it was a bad spot for them. I think they'll be much better in game two. You know, they were sort of in it, but they have these momentary lapses, Dave. And Cleveland just, you know, bury a couple of threes. And, you know, it seems like Cleveland was just toying with them last night, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the thing that you don't want to see in that particular matchup, and that Cleveland is not a physical team. They can be had inside. Last night, Toronto made Cleveland look like bullies, and that's not the way you approach this matchup. You've got to throw the first punch. If you're Toronto, they weren't positioned to do that.
No, they weren't. I do believe they're going to respond with a better performance. And we can't deny it, Dave. They're 1-12 all time now in game ones. They were flat in game one against the Milwaukee Bucks. Last year in the playoffs, they made it all the way to game six of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they lost game one of every series. They just don't win game ones, Dave.
Yeah, the problem is they got away a few times coming back to win some of those series, but you can't say, oh, no, we can afford to lose one, we'll come back. No, you can't do that at this level. So it wasn't just losing the scoreboard last night. They really lost the game itself. The fight wasn't there. And this is the one time you can be the aggressor against Cleveland. Indiana is far weaker than Toronto, but the Pacers got aggressive with the Cavaliers. They weren't intimidated. Now, the question inside the psyche of Toronto is you've had four playoff games on this court the last 2 years. You weren't in the hunt in any of them. Does it become a psychological block?
You're exactly right. And there's one thing with the Raptors, and I talked about this yesterday. When they lose ugly, and this is what they do. You know, Dave, last year they gave up 62 points last night in the first half. Last year, game one, they gave up 65 points. You know, they actually showed a little bit of fight down the stretch, which I liked. I do expect them to play better. I think maybe they can win at home a couple of times. But I don't know if this even goes six, Dave. We're looking at maybe five this year.
And this is disappointing because I've got some good Raptors futures in pocket.
Yeah, I'm disappointed too. So do I, actually. I'm disappointed with the rhythm, the energy, a lot of things. But let's see what they bring to the table tomorrow night. How surprised were you by the result in San Antonio, Texas last night, Dave?
See, here's what's real intriguing about this Houston team right now. So, you know, they knocked Oklahoma City out in five games, and they were 48 for 169 from three-point range. They shot that poorly and still knocked the Thunder out in five. So the question is, well, what happens if they make shots? Last night is what happens when they make shots. That is a real tough basketball team to deal with, and these adjustments aren't easy for Greg Popovich. He has a good front court of veteran players that can score down low, defend down low, but in this matchup he's got a bunch of old men that have to go guard on the perimeter. And Gasol, Lee, Aldridge, these guys just aren't geared to chase. This is a tough matchup for the Spurs.
Yeah, it really is. I think it looks like it's going to be Houston and Golden State. So before we get to the Golden State game, let's talk a little bit about the Wizards and the Celtics, Dave. You know, an interesting game. And the Wizards and the Raptors are very similar teams. They can look really good, and then they have these lapses, these 2-3-minute, 4-minute lulls, where they get sloppy defensively, and well, they're always sloppy defensively, the Wizards, but and then they go into these scoring droughts as well. They're a very streaky team, but I guess you live by the jump shot, you're going to die by the jump shot. Markieff Morris is going this evening. The Wizards, by definition, are not a very good road team in the playoffs, but they did win that clincher in Atlanta. Do you expect to see a more desperate Wizard team here tonight? What are you expecting?
If Markieff Morris can stay on the floor, yes, because the problem the Wizards have is they're just paper thin. And not only are their reserves not very good, but there's not a lot of chemistry. You know, Bogdanovich and Jennings weren't with the team until after the All-Star break. So their reserves have been getting outplayed so badly. Not having Ian Mahimney is a big issue that people don't talk about enough. So if Morris can at least go out there and be 90% of his usual self, I think they're in the hunt. Because I'll tell you what I'm going to be looking for, Gabe. Isaiah Thomas has played through the past week remarkably well with what he has had to go through. I mean, they say he didn't even land in Boston until 4 a.m. on Sunday before going out and turning in a good performance.
And again, then he gets a tooth knocked out.
Yeah, but at some point, though, does this adrenaline wear off a little bit? And might we see – this looks like that classic spot to see the flat game from somebody, because there's been such a rush of emotion and adrenaline for over a week. What happens now? So if I see – and I'm going to go right up to pregame warm-ups – want to think as much as I can about Morris. If he's capable of being near his level, yeah, I'll take some 5.5 tonight.
Yeah, you're right, Dave. You know, when Morris was on the floor, actually, they were up 45-42. Horford went off after the fact. So he really was a massive impact there.
Yeah, and it's just something they cannot replace. They don't have good front court people coming off the bench. That's going to be an issue for them as the playoffs proceed. But here's what's going to help Washington. Later in the series, you get a couple of settings where you'll get multiple days off between games.
Yeah.
So they will get a bit of a break later on.
So, Dave, before we move on to the next game, what do you make of the total here? You know, they played four times now. It's gone over three of the four times and have actually combined for 221 points or more in three of the last four times that they played. I never thought, you know, who'd imagine, Dave, that the Golden State Warriors game would be listed 12 points lower as far as the total than the Boston Celtics and the Washington Wizards. But neither the Wizards or the Celtics are exactly known for their defense. It's an extremely high number at 218, but it's hard to bet on the under.
No, because, you know, these teams don't guard each other well. And that what was so intriguing about the 16-0 opening on Sunday is Boston had good looks. They had good looks the entire game. They didn't make them early. But these teams don't guard each other. John Wall and Isaiah Thomas, two of the best creators in the NBA, but Thomas is the worst defensive point guard in the league, and John Wall is lower tier. So these teams will not do a good job of guarding each other.
And as you mentioned, we were talking about the Raptors, Dave. That was the thing last night as well, as you saw. Raptors had looks. You know, Patterson's got to do better. Like, I know he does a lot of the little things, and he does a lot of the grunt work, and you need a guy like that on the floor. But you also need a guy like that on the floor to hit a shot every now and then. You talked about P.J. Tucker, supposed to be a complimentary player. He's on the floor all the time. He's bombing threes. You know, the Raptors, Ibaka's a decent shooter. And you know, Ibaka had his hands full with Love. They sort of nullified each other out. But to me, that's a big thing. The Raptors just missed that assassin that can nail a three, Dave. They had the open looks. Washington's got those guys. They're streaky. Beal hot right now, which leads me into the Jazz and the Warriors. The Warriors are going to be off for 8 days. The Cavs were off for 8 days. And, you know, there's always a thought that maybe there'll be a little bit of ring rust, Dave, and they'll be a little bit cold coming out of the gate. They weren't. What do you make for the Warriors and the Jazz tonight?
Yeah, I'll tell you what makes this one so interesting from a point spread standpoint, because it could be over in four games, maybe five. But the point spreads are going to be real competitive because I think the Jazz are going to have a great attitude. This is one of those rare times in the playoffs where you're on a free roll.
Yeah.
There are zero expectations. So it's not like the Jazz are going out there to win tonight. They're just going out there to play the best they can play. And when teams have that mindset, that's when you beat point spreads. That's when you can keep these games closer. Because if you get down 18 or 20, it's not a shock. I mean, last night, Toronto got down. It was a shock. San Antonio got down. It was a shock. It won't be a shock to the Jazz. They'll keep grinding, and they'll keep playing their game.
Yeah, you're right, and we saw that even against the Clippers there were times, Dave, in one of the earlier games in Los Angeles, was it game one or game two, they were down by 16, I believe, and they came back. So you're right, they really are playing with house money, and I saw Quinn Snyder talking about that as well, about very proud of the team. You know, they almost, like you said, Dave, it's very rare. Normally, you know, coaches, well, unless we win this series, it doesn't mean anything what we accomplish. You're right. Quinn Snyder almost had that saying of, you know what? We won a playoff series for the first time in 7 years. I'm really proud of these guys. Let's go out there and have fun right now.
Yeah, one of the things we wrote about in the Tuesday Point Blank is that Snyder wrote one word on the chalkboard prior to Game 7 against the Clippers Sunday. He just wrote the word compete. It's a, just guys go out there and just compete hard. And if you compete hard, you see what happens. I think it's going to be the same thing tonight. You say, okay, we got 48 minutes against the Warriors. Let's go out and play hard for 48 minutes. I don't care what the score is. Let's just go play hard. That's interesting when you could take 13 or 13 and a half.
Total's 206 right now, Dave. Take on the number.
You know, it's tough because Utah wants to play slow, and they're going to play good defense. But I think what we're going to see from the Warriors in games like this, if they have a double-digit lead in the second half, shut the game down. Idea being, let's get to the conference finals, expending as little energy as possible. I think we're going to see some real dead fourth quarters in some of these Golden State games. If they have control, their eyes are on the prize.
And they generally have played to the under, these two, in their rivalry. But, you know, it's a low number. I agree with you. You know, but without being stated, Golden State's going to want to push the pace on these guys, right? So maybe first half overs are the way to go. Or first half totals, Dave, only because from a stylistic standpoint, Golden State's going to want to push the tempo and just ambush these guys and knock them out. Because, yeah, they're going to be challenged. I do have that vision. You're right. If Utah can't hang, they could get stuck in that 76-80 range, you know?
Yeah, and what happens early that helps your first half over notions, this is a tough transition for Utah style-wise to what they saw against the Clippers, because the Clippers weren't pushing the ball. So Utah didn't have to focus on that part of their game. They could get caught out of position multiple times early in this one.
So, Dave, we've got a couple of minutes here. Baseball, Phillies beat up on the Cubs last night. It was a big night for underdogs last night. I figured I got greedy. I took a shot with the Texas Rangers, big plus money last night. They were up 2-1. It was looking pretty good, and then it fell apart. You're taking a look at a bounce-back situation for the Cubs tonight, except it's a big number, so maybe a run line. Your take on these ball games tonight?
Yeah, I'll tell you what we like to look for is pitchers who have bottom-line stats that are far different from the way they're actually throwing the ball. And there might not be a bigger gap anywhere than with Jeremy Hellickson. I mean, he's off to a 4-0 start with a 180 earned run average. Looks like he's an all-star candidate. Everyone gets excited in the marketplace, but guess what? Strikeout percentage, ground ball to fly ball ratio, swinging strike percentage, all at career lows for Hellickson. It's just every once in a while, baseball allows you to get lucky with a lot of contact outs. And that's what Hellickson's been doing. He's been getting a lot of fly balls. Well, guess what? If you're pitching against the Cubs at Wrigley and you're a right-hander without much steam, look at that left-handed power that the Cubs can. Look at Schwarber. Look at Rizzo. They've got all these left-handers they can throw at Hellickson. I think his season will start to turn tonight.
So what are you going to do, Dave? Because I know it's not in your nature to lay 210, so you're going to run line this thing?
You can run line it because since the total is low, and since the markets are expecting a low-scoring game, you can lay a run and a half and take 0-5 with the Cubs. I don't mind getting even money or better on the Cubs to break this game open against Hellickson.
All right, Dave, we got to get out of here. But you like the Stros tonight, minus 50 cents?
Yeah, let's talk about Cole Hamels the same way. He is at a career low. Strikeout percentage, ground ball percentage, swinging strike percentage. 8 straight years of at least 180 innings. That wears a guy down. I think we've already seen the best of Cole Hamels.
For excellent insights such as this, read Dave's column. It's a great read on a daily basis. Some great information and picks there, and interaction with the readers as well. It's right there on the front page of pregame.com. It's called Point Blank. You'll see it right there on the front page. Dave, it's always a pleasure, sir. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
Dave Malinsky with us. All right, we'll talk some more baseball, some NFL football. Mike Cardano joins us next, and Warren Sharp's on deck. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, Great stuff with Dave Alinsky. We've got Warren Sharp with us. We now have the director of the Fantasy Sports Radio Networks joining us, Mr. Mike Cardano. And, of course, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You can hear Red Heat and Rage every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 o'clock Eastern with me and the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart. We're off to a great start. A lot of fun so far, Mike.
You guys are killing it. I'm glad I put that show on. It's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. People don't know what they're missing. They haven't tuned in yet.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's a nice cross between some rage, some comedy, and some late-night picks. You know what I like about the liveness of it, too? At 10 o'clock Eastern, it gives us an opportunity to give some picks and break down the 10:30 late-night playoff games.
Yeah, I haven't heard you whining yet about bad beats yet at 10 o'clock.
You know, last night actually was the first one. I was whining about the Spurs. Yeah, down by 30.
I had my first
real rage meltdown last night, you know, which I was like, man, exactly at the half, 69-39. I had a money line parlay with the Cavs and the Spurs that was dead in the water. But let's jump in right now. You're a Jets guy. Jets, you know, listen, I had the Buffalo Bills taking Jamal Adams with their pick in my mock draft. So I have no problems with Adams, but I'm very baffled by the fact that they take another safety in the following round. And if you're building your defense, Mike, you don't build it from the safeties. You build it from the line out. Would you agree with that? Like, what are they doing taking two safeties?
Well, listen, the only thing good about being a Jets fan is that you're a Bills fan. I mean, here's where I'm at. I have my Jets shirt, and I walk around with hashtag screw Cardano on the back.
Screw that's Cardano.
That's where I don't know. He was a great pick in terms of a pick himself, but, you know, there were 19 defensive backs taken in the first two rounds. One of them had to be a cornerback if he was going to go with the secondary. You can't do it that way. I don't know if they're happy with what they got up front. They're great names and stuff like that, but they didn't rush the quarterback at all.
No, so, yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't – the safety is the icing on the cake. You start out with the big guys on the line. It's baffling to me. I like the Adarius Stewart pickup. He's a good wide receiver out of Bama. Not great, but good, solid kid. Chad Henson, ironically enough, reminds me of Eric Decker. Nice wide receiver at Cal, impact football player. So, you know, but is he an impact player in the NFL? I don't know. You know, nice but not great. And I'm still baffled by the quarterback position. To me, I just would have taken Deshaun Watson. You know, that's what I would have done if I was the New York Jets. I find it interesting that Colin Kaepernick has moved to New York, sold his place in San Francisco, and bought a place in Manhattan. Is he just doing that to live in the Apple, or is he doing this because something's up?
You know, first of all, I agree with you about taking another receiver, especially when they got down to the fourth. The quarterback. There's no need to take another receiver there at that point. In terms of Kaepernick, I don't know. He's like George Jefferson. Maybe he's going to move in with Wheezy. You know, I don't know how that's going to end up. I think you're looking into it. Maybe it's more of a marketing thing than anything else. He's trying to market himself at this point. He's got a lot to correct. So I wouldn't read anything into it, though.
He's marketing himself. He's hanging outside of parole offices, handing out free suits to parolees.
Listen, to some people, any PR is good PR.
Yeah, but I don't think he's doing it for PR. Everyone thinks everything's PR. Like, he donated money to Somalia. It was PR. Like, I think we're past the point with Kaepernick that he's for PR. I'm not even sure if he cares if he plays in the NFL. But, all right, so from one dysfunctional situation to another, forget, you know, the Jets actually are like a solid foundation next to the Mets. Like, and you know Jay Horowitz, right? You've been around a long time, so you know Mr. Horowitz. You know,
he's been around since Father Time, yeah.
Yeah, like, what is he, 80 years old? Like, I swear, when I covered the Expos, I was the host of the Expos postgame show. Horowitz was nice to me. I was a young guy. The Mets were big time in those days, but he treated me with respect. And I got to tell you, he looked like he was 70 then, Mike, about 15 years ago. So he's a little older. Noah Syndergaard refuses the MRI, doesn't get in the tube, so to speak. Alderson says, what are you going to make? We can't force him to get into the tube. Well, I think you can when you're paying him like you are. And then after, the media gets in Syndergaard's face saying, what the hell's going on here? Why didn't you get the MRI? Syndergaard flips out at Jay Horowitz, who I think is 80 years old, in front of everybody. And who the hell is Syndergaard? Horowitz has been there forever, like you said. And then Ron Darling says that if he was in the room, he would have done something about it, and you don't go after Horowitz like that. It's a freaking train wreck, Mike.
Yeah, you know, the headline here should read, Sandy Alderson and Terry Collins combined to be a spineless jellyfish. It's really, you know, that what they should have said was, if you want to make any more than the $605,000 that you're currently making, you're going to take the MRI, or you're going to go over here and sit on the end of the bench until you do. I mean, the guy walks around the clubhouse like his bowel movements don't stink.
Yeah.
And he doesn't think he's Thor. He thinks he's the baseball Jesus. It's really gone to his head, his success. He's, you know, he's large and physical in stature. The media all woos over him.
Yeah.
And it's really gone to his head. And you can't run a team that way. You just can't do it.
Yeah, he's become a prima donna.
Yeah. Wilson, Pulsifer, and Isringhausen? The big three?
Yeah.
How did that work out for the Mets? They're doing that all over again with their pitchers. I don't know who their doctors are, but they're using the same guy since the Carlos Delgado fiasco. Nothing's changed. You know,
is
those
it
are
painful,
the
Mike, though, to get an MRI? Like, I don't know. I've never gotten in the tube. Like, I know it's like I've had the X-rays and it, whatever, and it sees freaks you out. You put the jacket on thing, you get in there and you do it. But, like, why would he refuse to get in the tube? You're a professional athlete. You think, like you had said, there's big money at stake here. You would think that you would want to get in the tube to make sure everything is all right. What's the big deal about taking the damn MRI?
Listen, he's young. He's stupid. Maybe he thinks there's a negative connotation when he comes up for his contract with it. Maybe he just thinks he's young and strong and he's impenetrable. I have no idea. He received awful advice or he didn't receive any advice. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know. But the Mets have no idea what they're doing with the health status of their players. How's it working out for David Wright?
Yeah.
How many games is Cespedes is going to miss
Lugo.
Either in total
Lugo's
or
out.
In part?
Matz is out. Lugo's out. This is exactly the disaster we worried about. We only got about a minute here, Mike, but which leads to we got Harvey on the hill tonight. Matt Harvey's admitting, I'm not ready. You rush me. You got a guy who says, you rush me. I wasn't ready. Here he is right now. How about this, Mike? He's already given up six home runs in 29 innings this year. He gave up 8 and 92 last year. He's telling the team, I'm not right, and they're throwing him out there.
Well, the biggest thing right now is he's hittable. It's almost like he's getting his work in. If he gets through six innings with semi-success, they just got to get him out of there and then go with something else. There's really no other choice.
On a plus side, Conforto's been on fire since I've been moved in the lineup, 6 home runs into 10 starts.
Hey, Gabe, you know, I own him on every single fantasy team I have. If you look at him, I think people missed the boat here. At Oregon State, he had one of the most storied collegiate careers in the last generation. And just because he went into a little funk in his second year, everybody got off him. I think he's sitting in a great spot. He's going to have a great career.
He's on my team as well. All right, we got to get out of here, Mike. But Baltimore and Boston, jackasses in Boston, they should give Jones a standing ovation tonight to send a message. You like the under, Sale and Asher. Unbelievable, Sale. Red Sox have only scored 4 runs in 37 innings for him.
Yeah, right now he's the best pitcher in baseball. And I think that's going to carry the under here in this game.
All right, and Angels and Mariners, you're going over. I'm a little worried about this one because I tell you, Paxton's been on fire.
He has been on fire, but he's not Cy Young. It's 5 starts. He had a 1.3 career whip coming into the season. So, you know, he's at, I don't know where he's at, 0.8 or something like that. This is not going to continue. He's maybe matured or whatever, but he's 28 years old now. He's not Cy Young all of a sudden. He's got to face Trout. I think I get at least a run produced from Trout tonight, either batting it in or scoring. And I think Seattle's going to put up a crooked number. So I like them against the lefty pitcher.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
All right, take care.
Warren Sharp joins us next. Game Time Decisions continues on the Fantasy Sports Network. If you missed the start of the show, it'll replay at 5:30 on the television side of things, 5 o'clock on Fantasy Sports Radio Networks, Red Heat and Rage Radio with me and Cam Stewart now every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 10 o'clock Eastern, live on Fantasy Sports Network Radio as well. So, hey, it's football season, man. Like I said the other day, once the draft is done, the football season is officially here. You can bet the games. You can bet week one. Hell, you can bet any game. Cantor actually released lines for every game. South Point released regular season win totals, which means if it's football talk, there's no one better to break it down with us than Mr. Warren Sharp, sharpfootballanalysis.com, as Warren is already hard at work on his 2017 National Football League preview. Hugely successful debut last year. Warren, it's great to have you back in rotation. How you doing, Warren?
Hey, I'm doing great. Like you said, football season is here, and happy to talk about it with you. Enjoy going over these teams and over the league in general with you.
Well, you know, Warren, you're a great follow on Twitter, and you become one of the leaders in the industry, actually, for instant analysis. And I see people are asking you, you know, about, hey, what do you think of this schedule, about, you know, pass defenses, running backs, pass defense. I find it was something interesting. You were talking about Adrian Peterson and the schedule of teams that he plays. And the schedule that the teams that the Saints play generally struggle against defending the pass with the running back. So you thought maybe he could be in a nice situation. A lot of information like that Warren's got on Twitter. But I see you're already telling people the Preview Magazine, your target date, end of June, June 26th or so. But you're looking for people to contribute, and you've got a contest going on. Tell us about this.
Yeah, certainly what we're looking to do over at sharpfootballstats.com, that's my free stats website, is I'm looking to just promote great content. I started this site less than a year ago, and it has visualized analytics. It allows people to see and understand the NFL and complicated aspects of the analytics in a very simple, easy-to-understand manner. I think a lot of people nowadays with technology are visual learners, and so you could see a picture and really retain that information easily as compared to seeing columns of black and white text. And so that's what we're trying to do over there. This contest basically is I'm trying to get a couple of writers for this upcoming season, and essentially there's a couple of different opportunities, topics to write about. I've got a couple different deadlines set up for those. And if your piece is good enough, if your writing style is acceptable, then you can write in the magazine as well, and then possibly write for the website this upcoming football season. So look at the just I've got all the analytics and the data and the tables there, but unfortunately, as you know, with so many different balls in the air of work that I'm doing, Gabe, it's difficult to get the time to provide great content on a regular basis, so that's what we're looking for.
Well, it's good news. The operation's becoming big that you need help, and like you said, you know, a lot of people are laying people off. Sharp Football's looking to hire if you have what it takes, but, yeah, Warren's a smart guy, so you better bring it. You better bring it. So, Dallas Cowboys. Let's talk some regular season win totals here. The Dallas Cowboys, such a public team. I was somewhat surprised to see at South Point they set the number at 9.5, coming off a 13-win campaign last year. As far as their draft was concerned, not spectacular, but I thought it was steady. I should clarify, I am a Michigan guy. So, you know, I like Lewis. I like Taco Charlton. I like Awuzie. That they bring in as well. Switzer's a fast kid. You know, yeah, they already have Cole Beasley. But, you know, I don't know if that means if this is Beasley's last year there. But I like the draft. Prescott coming in with second year. I don't see a lot of weaknesses with this football team. What was your impression of the number at 9.5?
Yeah, I mean, the way I first look at the schedule when I see the win total, I don't immediately jump to whether I think it's high or low. I look at that in consideration of the schedule that they're going to face. And so there's a couple different pages over at the Sharp Football Stats website where you can visualize schedule strength and upcoming opponents and that sort of thing. The Dallas Cowboys face the number one most difficult schedule this upcoming season based upon total efficiency of their opponents that they play. That includes offense, defense. It's a very difficult schedule overall. Now, the positive is they were sort of prepared a little bit for this last year. They played a very difficult schedule last year. They even played some very difficult defenses last year. They played a top 10 schedule of defenses last year, and their offense still was extremely productive. They're going to face the same thing this year. They play the third most difficult schedule of opposing defenses this upcoming season. Now, we know how great their offense was. We know how strongly they produced, and they have the potential to only get better with the fact that Elliott and Dak now have more time to work together, gel behind that offensive line. You know, I think this offense is going to be equally dangerous as to what it was last season. But they will have challenges along the way, obviously. There's a number of stretches in their schedule if you look at the way that it starts. I mean, you talk about three tough defenses that you're going to have to face off the bat. The Giants, the Broncos, and the Cardinals, with the Broncos and the Cardinals both being on the road, weeks 1 to 3 of the season, is going to be a brutal start for this Cowboys offense. Zeke is basically matchup proof to some extent. But those are three very difficult defenses to go up against, two of which are being on the road. And might I add, one thing we should factor in when we're talking about Denver week two is playing at altitude off of a slightly short week because they play the Giants in prime time week one. That could be a factor. It's always harder to play in Denver at the very beginning of the season, weeks one, two, or three, because these guys don't really have the conditioning since they let up a lot on these players nowadays in training camp.
Yeah, if you look at the Dallas Cowboys schedule, as you mentioned, they open up with the Giants at home, but then they're at Denver, they're at Atlanta. October's a little easier. They host the Rams, they host the Packers, they get the bye week. They're at the 49ers and the Redskins. November's a big month for them. They got five games, four of them at home. That's actually going to be they host the Chiefs in November. That's going to be Romo's first game. They're at Atlanta, then three straight home games, Eagles, Chargers, Redskins. December's real tough. One thing with the Cowboys, Warren, and you and I have discussed this for the years that you and I have been doing this, the Cowboys have always been a good road team, though. Even with, going back to the Romo era, they were good with Romo. Garrett's always been better on the road than he's been at home. So that, I think that that's a positive sign for some of these tough road games as well. All right, we've only got about 4 minutes, unfortunately, Warren. San Francisco 49ers, they fleece the Chicago Bears at the draft. The initial win total is 4.5. And I got to tell you, man, I'm looking at this lineup here, and there's a lot to like about what they've done. Yeah, you overpaid for Pierre Garçon, but you had the money. And it's not like people are lining up to go there. So I don't mind overpaying in the situation that you're in. Goodwin, he's not great, but he's got speed. You've got a decent tight end there already. I'm a Hoyer fan. Hoyer's serviceable, and I think he'll give you more than Cap and what Gabbert did. Carlos Hyde's a decent back. Defensively, you're dropping in Thomas Foster. You already got Buckner. You already got Bowman. You already have some talent right there. And you're bringing in a nice, fresh coach in Kyle Shanahan. What's your take on the 49ers and the 4.5?
Yeah, well, they play the second most difficult schedule of opposing defenses this upcoming season. Ooh. So that's going to be difficult. Now, Kyle Shanahan had experience with this last year. He was coach, offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. They played the second most difficult schedule, but they don't have the weapons like he had down in Atlanta. I love what, obviously, he's going to try to do to start the season as his first gig as a head coach. Obviously, they're going to try to start out the gates very, very fast and very quick. But when you look across the board at their schedule and you compare that to what they had last year, they played – last year, they played a number of the same teams. They played the Rams, obviously, same division. But they also played the Panthers, who they faced last year. They played the Chicago Bears, who they faced last year. You look at those couple of teams, even Seattle. Those teams should be better this year, although I will say Chicago maybe not so much. But you look at the Rams, they can't be much worse than they were last year. The Seahawks should be better, figure out something with their offensive line, and they were a 10-win team last year. The Panthers are going to be better than what they were last year. And then you look at the non-division teams that they're going to face. They don't get to play the AFC East. That means they don't get games against the Bills and against the Dolphins. They don't get a game against the Jets. Instead, they're playing teams like the Houston Texans, the Indianapolis Colts, the Jaguars should be a little bit more
much improved division this year.
The NFC.
AFC South,
yeah,
much improved.
East is
yeah.
Difficult. So it's going to be very tough for this team. I think the schedule is absolutely brutal for this team. That's who they're really going up against this year in terms of those wins. It's easy to picture them getting five wins just in a vacuum and thinking they're going to be better than they were last year. I think the head coach cannot be underestimated. A new scheme with a new head coach does wonders for a team at times. So that's going to be a massive improvement. But the schedule is absolutely brutal.
Yeah, I looked at the schedule, and I'm not locked in or anything, but I had a hard time getting past four. Even with the positivity, I had a hard time getting past four. And one thing, it's tough, Ward, we don't know their identity. I don't know. What kind of team are they going to be? Are they going to run the ball with Hyde? Are they going to throw the ball? Like, what is there going to be their identity? And it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But follow Warren on Twitter at sharpfootball.com. Sharp Football Analysis is the website. And follow him on Twitter so you'll keep posted as far as the contests are concerned and the upcoming preview. Warren, it's always a pleasure. We never have enough time when you're on, but thanks for joining us.
Yeah, always happy to be with you.
There's Warren Sharp with us. Right, we'll take a quick break. I got an NBA DraftKings lineup and some plays in today coming up next. All right, we got a couple of games on the NBA hardwood this evening, the start of a new series and game two of another. Let's jump right in with Isaiah Thomas. Dude's starting to get a little bit of a rhythm right now. I don't know how he's doing this, but he is. You know, returns from the funeral, loses his tooth, but the kid just keeps grinding, man. 33 points and 9 assists and a rebound for 51 DK points in game one. The Wizards just can't guard him, and he can't guard them either. That's just the way that it goes, and we'll get to John Wall a little bit later on. Avery Bradley, $6,400. He put up 36 DK points, and he's put up 36 or more in four of his last five games. He took 20 shots in game one, man, including 9 three balls, threw in 4 steals as well. Avery Bradley's been a great playoff performer. Iguodala, not a ton of upside here, but the dude's going to do a little bit of everything. He's put up 29 or more DK points in two of his last three. Those games were blowouts, too. He's not going to give us 45 or 50, but he is going to get there. He's going to give us 4 or 5 times the value. He's not going to hurt us, per se. We're going with Draymond Green, man. The guy averaged 50 DK points a game versus the Blazers. Put up no less than 44 with a high of 66 in game one. During the regular season, man, he averaged 11 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, and 3 steals a game versus the Utah Jazz. Hard not to have that in your lineup. Gortat went off, man. Absolutely torched the Celtics in game one. Boston are a good team, but they're soft in the paint. He racked up 16 points and 13 boards. Give me Gortat. Rozier. Rozier's quietly putting up some nice numbers, man. He keeps put up 7-8 times his salary in 3 consecutive games. Dirt cheap. He's played about 15, 17 minutes a game. Boris Diaw, same thing. Doesn't play a ton. Could give you about 20 minutes a night. But I think stylistically, you're going to see Diaw involved in this series against the Golden State Warriors. And at this type of price, I think he's more than worth it. And John Wall. China, this is why we're squeezing in the Diaws and the Roziers, so we can get to John Wall, man. John Wall's just Mr. Reliable. As far as Golden State is concerned, I'm never really sure if it's going to be Curry, if it's going to be Durant. That's why I like going with Green. We know, man, Thomas and Wall are both going to go off. Let's get to our plays of the day. Give me the Washington Wizards plus 5.5. Don't love it, but like it. Give me the over 218. Don't love it, like it. Give me the Utah Jazz plus 13. Sort of like it. Give me the over 206, hoping that it gets there. New York Rangers. Man, these are weird picks I have. New York Rangers, don't want to lay 65 cents, but I think they win. Predators, don't want to lay 55 cents, but I think they win. You know what? The Mariners might be my best bet of the night. Paxton's a stud, man. Paxton minus 45 cents against the Halos. And the Kansas City Royals, they had lost 9 in a row. They won last night. Baseball's a streaky sport. I think maybe they can rattle off a couple of wins like the Toronto Blue Jays have. And I'm tempted to take the Toronto Blue Jays tonight, but I'm not going to give it to you. But, hey, maybe it's worth a look if you want it. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.